All right, we are live. Another episode of Lions Collective Wednesdays at 6 p.m. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunch Time Sports. We got T-Shirt Football Network's own Justin Rogers in a new location we've streamed from before, Dog and Pony Brewing. We have Will Birchfield, of course, 97.1, and Colton Palazzi from The Athletic. Fellas, now we have two people in different locations. I don't know. I need to switch things up. Me and Colton maybe need to switch things up a little bit. I think we need to switch things
Apparently.
Up.
J-Rodge has to drink one beer for each of us during this pod, so get skipping, dog.
I'm just working on the Lions Collective Ale. You know, Kyle and I are brainstorming. Yes. We're coming up with some ingredients. We're brewing a batch fresh right now, so expect that by, 2027.
I mean, this looks like an episode of Breaking Bad behind you, Justin. I mean, what's going on over there is just...
He's in the lab.
No comments.
He's gonna end up in his fugue state and start walking around there naked.
I love it. I absolutely love it. We're coming off obviously a win by the Lions here over the Commanders. Dan Campbell calling plays, and based on all the data, he might be the best play call in the history of play callers. Based on the data, just from that game, scored in every single possession. We also have a big game this weekend, Sunday Night Football, Eagles. Which we saw that Eagles game on Monday. It was absolutely brutal for both sides, the Packers as well, which we will we'll talk about that Eagles game. But I guess we could just start with the win. Dan Campbell calling plays. I know the way people kind of found out, even though Dan said he discussed it and told Jared on Monday, but they just panned to Dan in the reading glasses. I mean, it's just – that was like the breaking news. The guy just has reading glasses with a play call sheet, which he's had play call sheets in the past. But once those reading glasses come on, he's calling those plays. I mean, there's a zero doubt in my mind the man was calling plays once we saw the reading glasses. But they changed the play caller up. He wanted kind of another opportunity for the Lions to kind of get in rhythm offensively, and boy, did it work out. Everyone got touches. Now everyone knows that this thing with John Morton, you can't possibly go back. I know Dan mentioned it. You can't go back to John Morton now for the rest of the season. I mean, you've made the decision. And John, I think, does a great job getting Dan prepared, just like some of the – play calling head coaches in the league. Their OC gets them prepared. John still does that. But it was a big deal. I mean, Dan hasn't called play since Anthony Lynn lost his play calling duties. So it's been a little bit.
Turns out that was after getting pummeled by the Eagles too. So kind of nice timing, I guess, if you will. Look, if you're looking for differences, I think the thing that really stands out is they finally achieved the balance that I think we've kind of all been looking for from them all season. I don't think the play calls were a whole lot different. They still had screens. They still had play action. They still leaned on the run. But you saw a really, really kind of perfect balance to this offense with 15 carries for Gibbs, 15 carries for Demo, 5 targets at least for Amon-Ra, J-Mo, Laporta. You got Khalif Raymond involved, which I think is another way to keep kind of defenses honest. And, you know, what does it result in? It results in the second most yards in the Dan Campbell era. It results in a top 20 yardage total in the last 5 years. And so while I don't think that what they did was a whole lot different, it was just the way that it was done that really, I think, unlocked everything this week.
Yeah, it was funny at that game because the Lions are on the field for their opening possession, and there was some buzz on Twitter for sure. And you're kind of taking a look at Dan, and you kind of squint, and you see the glasses on, and you're just like, "Oh, it's kind of new." Like the call sheet, he always has one in hand, so I don't know if that was like the biggest tell, but like the glasses were different. And he said he's like blind as a bat. Like he said, I can look like 100 yards downfield. I can see everything far away. You put something in front of me, I can't see anything. So that felt like a giveaway to me, but you still need to get the confirmation elsewhere. And we got it from a couple of places. Justin, you had it at halftime. I think the halftime reporter of that game also talked to Dan and was like, look, we just wanted to change things up a little bit. So it was new, right? Like he hasn't done that in a few years. And one thing I went back to is I go back to the Eagles game in 2022. Right before then, Dan had a comment like, he wasn't telling us for sure if Ben was going to call plays or not. He was still being a little coy about it. Maybe he was joking, but he was like, look, man, I still have a desire, a want to call plays. And I really think he liked it in that 21 season. I wasn't around for that, but you could tell the offense got better and improved. I think having Campbell and Jared's headset hearing him, that voice, I think that really kind of sparked a turnaround for him in the second half of that season. And so just, watching from afar, I think you could tell that, like, he liked doing it and wasn't ready to give it up, but when you have a guy like Ben Johnson come in, you know, you got to do what you got to do, pass it off. But look, I give Dan credit because that's a hard thing to do, man. Like, he's good friends with John Morton. They go way back. And, you know, Morton was brought here to call plays and keep this offense afloat. And, you know, it's not like he didn't do that. They're still averaging 29.9 points per game under him, which is second in the NFL at the time. But it was just how it was getting done. Like, Jamal wasn't really involved. Kind of leaned on Amon-Ra St. Brown and Jahmyr Gibbs, like spreading the wealth that was there. Then Dan takes over and magically all that stuff is fixed. So playing the Commanders will do that. But, you know, he found something that needed to be fixed and he addressed it head on. And so I think you have to give him credit for identifying it and making the move, because I don't think a lot of coaches around the league would have done it this sudden into a season. They might give it more time, but, you know, Dan felt the time was right.
Well, and look, Dan was also tight and went way back with Anthony Lynn, and he was tight and had a really solid relationship with Aubrey Pleasant. And those are two more examples of coaching hires that weren't working out the way that he anticipated them to. And he wasn't afraid to make a change in either case in midseason. It takes someone with a lot of conviction to make those changes and to make them aggressively before whatever issues you might be seeing snowball any further. That's definitely one of Dan's strengths. And I agree with you guys. Obviously, the reading glasses were one tell. For me, the confirmation was shortly in the game seeing Dan Skipper go in motion and then line up out wide. And you were like, okay, yes, yes. This is indisputably Dan Campbell calling plays now. And then, you know, maybe the proof of Dan Campbell's fingerprints on the game were felt and seen in the first three plays when, you know, to Justin's point, maybe the calls themselves weren't different, but the rhythm of it, the sequencing felt different when we see finally like a positive run up the gut for Jahmyr Gibbs, first play of the game for 8 yards, back to Gibbs for a first down. And then immediately following those two runs, they kind of line up in a tight formation. They're in 12 personnel. It looks like they're going to run a third straight run. They've got Amon-Ra St. Brown lined up near the line and in where he would usually block. And instead they go play action and they hit St. Brown, who kind of slipped out into the flat for like a 14-yard gain upfield. And you're like, okay, there is the flow, to use St. Brown's word, that has been missing for most of the season. Even as the offense has piled up points and spurts, the rhythm has been lacking, and you felt like you saw it right away, and then it just continued from there.
Yeah, I think obviously people were first to say, well, you know, it is the Commanders. I don't care who it is. The rhythm matters, and scoring on every possession matters, because I know they scored 52 against the Chicago Bears, but to your guys' point, it's just how the rhythm of the game was called. And honestly, this week he faces a much more difficult opponent with Vic Fangio. He's one of the best defensive play callers in the entire game. And if you watch that Monday night game, if you look at the box score, you would say this might be one of the best defensive performances all around. But then when you actually watch the game, defense was definitely played at points, but it just looked disgusting more so than impressive, in my opinion. So it'll be a great test for Dan and some of these weapons. I want to at least mention and give a shout out. I know we talked about it before the show. Yody stepping in there and playing very, very solid football. I know Taylor Decker's referred to him as a starter, and I think he's earned at least the spotlight for other NFL teams to look at this man as a potential starter. I know I was talking to Justin before the show, and he brought up a great point. Evan Brown kind of making that comparison, where Evan Brown ended up being a starter elsewhere. This seems like a similar trajectory for a guy like Yody. He stepped in after Mahogany went down. He started at that left guard spot, and it seemed like, I know it's the Commanders, but they still got some guys on that defensive line, although one was ejected for essentially slapping Amon-Ra St. Brown. He looked very good in both the, obviously with them running the ball effectively and protecting Jarrett. So a big shout out to Yody. But would you guys have a similar takeaway with that O-line with Mahogany being?
Yeah, I thought, you know, we looked at this group and we saw, like, you know, this need for maybe a guard at the trade deadline. And I think it was a reasonable ponderance, if you will, but Yody stepped up and he stepped up and played really, really well. And, you know, I was talking to some Lions offensive linemen today, and they didn't think Washington really had their hearts in this one. They thought they were able to bully them a little bit more than they thought, but I really look at that as kind of the heart of the operation. Why did this thing work so well? It's those three guys in the middle blocked their asses off in this one, creating the push in the run game. They didn't have any negative plays, a lot of second and sixes, second and threes, third and ones. it really just kind of changed the dynamic and the flow of the offense in general.
Yeah, I'll echo Justin's comments there. I thought they really played well. And, you know, you could kind of tell without having to talk to a lineman that the Commanders weren't really in it. But I agree with that sentiment as well. But in a game like that, you know, you want to see the response. And I think we all figured the Lions would win this one pretty easily. I think we all picked them last week, if I'm not mistaken. So we all figured this would happen. But just to see that group that was really questioned all week, some of those voices were coming from inside the house with their own OC, who was kind of saying, look, we need our offensive line to play better. And he wasn't entirely wrong. Like when Morton said that, I think it was kind of, you know, maybe a bit of a challenge, but maybe just kind of how he sees it. And, you know, Morton's going to call it like he sees it every time. Maybe the bedside manner wasn't quite there. And that's just kind of what we have come to expect from Morton. But I never thought he was entirely wrong. That offensive line needed to play better. And they're capable of playing better. And that's something Campbell said as well. So, to see them come out the way they did and to see Coyote step in the way he did, that's kind of par for the course. Like, they trust him. There's a reason they didn't go out and make a move. And I'm not sure there would have been a better offensive lineman out there that you could have traded for that would have been better than what you have in house already with guys like that. So, you know, I was really impressed by that group. And again, it's the Commanders. So I want to put that out there. I would like to see more. That's just me. But, yeah. You know, I think for what it was in that game, like, that was exactly what you want to see from that group.
Yeah, I think it was really impressive to Jared Goff, too. He was on the radio yesterday and said he thought the offensive line played incredible and said, you know, when they play like that, we're awfully tough to beat. And that's obviously true for any team in the NFL. It just feels especially true and applicable to this team that has an offense built around the run game and the play action pass. And you know, I went back and looked at some of the numbers, and they were averaging almost 8 yards per carry on first and second down, and magically, poof, their third down issues are solved. You know, they faced third and 10 plus 6 times in that collapse, that debacle against the Vikings, just once last Sunday against Washington. And to no surprise, they had their most efficient, or tied for the most efficient, day on third down of the season, going 5 for 10, and most of those conversions were pretty easy. And then the play action game shows up in a really big way, more than it has all season. And I think we all agree the hallmark of this offense, whether it was being called by Dan back in 21 or even more so under Ben last year especially, has been their explosiveness and efficiency in play action. And that honestly had begun to dry up a little bit with John Morton calling plays, especially over the past month, as that run game had struggled to find yards on first and second down, and defenses weren't forced to respect it. But once they started churning out 7-8 yards per carry against the Commanders, they dip back into that play action in a really effective way. I there's all kinds of different ways to kind of parse these numbers, but the one that stood out most to me is that Jared Goff last year led the league in percentage of dropbacks in play action, led the league in play action passes by a wide margin. He entered this game against the Commanders, I think 10th overall in play action passes, and maybe more notably was dropping back in play action only about a quarter of the time. And that was 10% less than he dropped back in play action last year when he had the best season of his career. You go look at the game on Sunday, more than half of his dropbacks were in play action, and he was as dynamic as ever when he was unleashing the ball. So when you started to kind of dissect the things that were most significantly different with Campbell calling plays, I think that was the most important and maybe the most compelling one that stood out to me. They got back to who they are in every way against the Commanders. And I'll echo what Colton echoed from Justin and what Justin echoed from Jeff, which is that, yes, that was the 28th ranked defense entering the game. And to be fair to John Morton, this offense had some prolific showings against similarly poor defenses earlier this season, and you can go right down the list, and it was against the stouter defenses where they struggled to move the ball. So certainly, you know, a bigger test awaits, but I think it's fair to say that the Lions aced their first one with Campbell back calling plays.
It's easy to get into play action, right, when you're a threat to run the ball, and you are a threat to run the ball in those second and third down situations they got themselves in. Let me pitch this galaxy brain idea to you that I kind of wrote about earlier this week, but I think there's something to it. Will, you've talked about this before, where Campbell has this feel for just how a game is going to go. And I think that's both before the game happens and while the game is going, right? And so he was probably pondering this play calling change for a little bit, right? Like it something that is big, it weighs on you a little bit. I think it was a smart move to choose this game for a myriad of reasons. One being, you can knock some rust off against a bad opponent. But two, let's say you keep it in John's hands, right? Keep it in Morton's hands, and they have a performance that's 85% of this. Now you're potentially delaying the inevitable, right? You're not pulling the Band-Aid off. And so I feel like the timing of this move is just another one of those reflective things of Campbell's feel for timing and big picture stuff that, you know, maybe a lot of other coaches don't have.
Yeah, I'll take it a step further. I think part of the timing goes into who they're playing this week. This is a big game, and I think Campbell knows that. And, you know, taking over the play calling reins, doing that a week before this game where, you know, Jared's gets used to you being in his headset again, being in his helmet again. Players around this team are used to Dan calling plays and what he wants again, because some of these guys like Jahmyr Gibbs and David Montgomery, they weren't here when Campbell was calling plays last time. So I think just getting used to him on the headset was part of it too. But I certainly think that there's a feel there for Campbell and, you know, what he wants it to look like, and timing. That's all part of what makes Dan. And you talk to people around this team and around, you know, even upstairs. I remember I did a story before the season talking about Dan and his feel for, you know, how games are going to play out. And I was told, we want to keep that on the down low. Like, Dan doesn't like when people know that he actually knows ball. He likes
to
have perception and persona and whatnot. And they would like to keep it that way, but they can't anymore, man. After a performance like that, he's getting a lot of love and a lot of praise around the league for getting this team back on track. And, you know, I think they would like to see more of that for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Justin and Colton. And it also applies on like a more micro level in the game. He has a really great feel for when and how to call certain plays over the course of four quarters. And that's like a really hard thing to quantify or analyze it to the point that you really can't, other than to watch the game and feel it. And it was something that Jared also talked about yesterday when he was just like, he used the word feel and said he just kind of knows when to take the shot, when to run the ball, when to go to play action. And others don't. And it doesn't mean that John Morton doesn't, or that John Morton won't eventually, but clearly Campbell knows these players, and especially this quarterback, better than anyone on this planet. And he is an offensive mind himself. And clearly he knew when to hit which levers on Sunday. And I think, to me, the way that I sort of like processed that was, Dan's really aware of how every single decision that is made for the benefit of the team also affects each individual player. And I think it was beginning to weigh on him that guys like David Montgomery, who is a core piece of this offense, weren't being featured enough early in games, and that even Khalif Raymond wasn't having enough of a role over the course of this season. And I don't think it was any coincidence that in the first eight plays alone, the Lions' four best offensive players all touched the ball, between Gibbs and St. Brown and David Montgomery and Jameson Williams. And then you have Laporta pop on the second drive. Then you have Khalif Raymond come to life on the third. And all of a sudden, just through the first quarter and a half, you have shown your entire armory, and the Commanders are feeling like they have no chance to stop it. But the Demo one really stood out to me. And Campbell still led with Gibbs on Sunday, and I don't think anyone would argue with that decision, but he also made a point to get Demo the ball early. And if you go back and look at the way that Demo has been used on the first two drives, the past seven games, he had zero carries in three of those in the first two drives. He had one in three others, and he had three in just one. And Dan got him four right away. First two drives, here's the ball, get cooking. And that helps Gibbs too. And it helps the rushing attack, and it helps the play action. And I think he knows how to make players feel involved. And I think you could hear it in David's voice when he was asked afterwards, like, could you feel a change with Campbell calling plays? And he was kind of careful, and sly as he kind of is, but he was like, yeah, man, it felt good. It felt good. And of course it did. Like, David's a guy who I think should be featured more prominently over the course of games, not just later, not just on the third or fourth drive. And Campbell made no mistake about that on Sunday. That stood out to me too.
I love bringing in really obscure pop culture references, but Colton, you got me on one with Campbell trying to hide his intelligence. And it makes me think of the old SNL skit, the unfrozen caveman lawyer. It's a caveman that represents, like, that's what it is, right? Like, he presents Meathead. That's what he gets the label of, or did at some point. And he's clearly got a football IQ that exceeds most of the league. You know, I'm not going to say like the best, but like it's high end. It's elite. And so I'm going to tell you my favorite play of this game, because it kind of fits into all of this, right? It's fourth and one. They line up with trips to the left. J-Mo runs vertical. St. Brown runs vertical. Both those guys get doubled. Khalif Raymond doesn't move, and he just left uncovered.
Yeah.
Jared Goff's just like, just flips it over, and it's like fourth and one, and they get 13 yards. Like, it's such a smart play call. You're taking advantage of the way defenses are flooding your and bracketing your star players, and you're going to your tertiary weapon, right? And that's the way to keep these defenses honest. And ultimately, it's going to pay it forward for St. Brown eventually. They're going to have to respect David Montgomery. They're going to have to respect Brock Wright and Khalif Raymond. And you're not going to be able to double team St. Brown every single time. And he's going to get some of these, you know, 10, 15 yard catches that are going to go for 40 because there isn't that second defender there to protect it.
Yeah, yep. I think this change obviously brings a interesting question to kind of the future of John Morton. And I've always said, I mean, and I think most people would agree, you prefer your head coach to call plays offensively, especially in an offensive league, because then you don't have to worry about losing your OC necessarily. Like Rams fans, 49ers fans, Chiefs fans, they don't care who's leaving at OC, because you know you have the main guy calling plays regardless. And I think that's where the Lions should end up going. And I think that's where it's trending as of right now. And we have the rest of the season to see Dan Campbell call plays. But I think John Morton, I know it's easy to say, you know, get rid of the guy. But I will say, based on what you guys have talked about and based on what's been reported with John Morton, like, no one can question his work ethic. No one can question his ability to be prepared for a football game. I think it just came down to the simple fact that maybe the Lions were just not finding a rhythm with him calling plays. It doesn't mean the guy doesn't know offense. I mean, he was with the Broncos as their passing game coordinator, and Bo Nix had a really, really good year. Mm-hmm. Because John Morton was prepping Sean Payton for the passing game, and Sean Payton was calling the plays. I think that's probably going to be a similar role for John Morton. I actually love that role for John Morton. So I think for me, it's not as much of a question. I think John's probably better suited and better fitted. You know, you get the OC title, but just getting Dan prepared, as kind of Dan talked about. But do you guys kind of see it in a similar way for John Morton, that there is a future still here in Detroit? It just won't be necessarily calling plays. I know Dan mentioned that you never know, you know, he could end up calling plays again at some point, which I guess could happen. I guess I try to compare it to, like, even though it's not as significant, it's like benching maybe a starting quarterback that's on the fringe of being benched, and then you put in the backup and you win a game. It's hard to go back to your starter after that. But what do you guys kind of think of John Morton's role for the future here in Detroit?
I think it's a really good comp to use, the backup being benched, and doesn't mean the backup's ever going to come back. You know, if Dan's in a rhythm and it works, like, stick to it. But I the way I see it is, like, nothing changes Monday through Saturday, right? Like, the preparation is still the same. Campbell's already heavily involved in the meetings and the game planning. I think that continues. And now I'm guilty of this, where I don't trust other people to do the work the way I want to do it. And it's not a admirable quality, but, like, I just trust myself to do the work better. And
hey, we shared notes during training camp. You trusted my eyes during those joint practices.
You got your
name. I had somebody watching you. Don't worry.
The eye in the sky.
but like, you know what I'm saying, right? Like, you know your own standard better than anybody, and you can hire somebody that sees the game the same way, but, like, maybe it's still 70-80% of how you would do it. Campbell knows how he would do it, and we've already talked about this. He has the feel for the game. He has the feel for his players. All those guys trust him to be hitting the right buttons in the week, in the game, with management of personalities. And so if John Morton can do all of the prep work, the identification of mismatches, all the, I don't want to say busy work, because it's more than that, but if he can get Campbell prepared to just pull the trigger on the play calling duties, like, that's still an asset. And he's not going to get a better job offer. Nobody's going to call him to call plays. Like, no disrespect, like, it hasn't worked his last two spots. Maybe if you want three, if you want to go back to USC, So he's got an OC title. He's getting an OC paycheck. He's around people he likes, including his best friend, David Shaw. Like, I don't see any reason that this dissolves unless his ego is so hurt. And nothing about John Morton has told me that that is the type of person he is. I don't see his ego getting in the way of him continuing on in this role as long as Campbell will have him. And I don't see Campbell pushing him out either.
Yeah, I go back to Campbell's own comments, and I thought he made a good point where he talked about Ben in 2021. And he said, you know, look, I don't forget, like, I called those games. I called, you know, he said, what, 8 or 9 games that he called in 21. And so he said, but Ben, he watched, he learned, he saw how I ran it, how I wanted to run it, what I was looking for. And then it evolved, and he evolved it from there. He took it. He knew exactly what I wanted by the middle of 22. I didn't have to say a word. And he said, that's where John is right now. You know, he said, sometimes that's the best way to really know what someone's looking for. It's just going through that. So when I heard him say that, yeah, I mean, it does kind of remind me a little bit of that. Obviously Ben's a different cat out there, but I think just demonstrating, like, here's what I want. Here's the balance, the rhythm, who I want to get involved, what I want to run, you know, more play action, you know, fewer 12 personnel sets. Like, that game was sort of the blueprint for what he wants. It's not always going to look like that, obviously. You're not always going to put up 44 and 550 yards of offense. But in terms of the feel and the rhythm and the flow, like, sometimes learning is the best way to do it. And, like, you know, Morton was here in 22, but a lot of these guys weren't. So I think there's sort of a feel there. So that's kind of where my mind goes. And, look, I don't even know if Dan wants to do this long term. Obviously, he likes calling plays. He said in the past, but he also said there's a reason he sort of hesitated to make this move, and it's because he knew what it would require of him on a weekly basis, and being more involved on the offense and maybe spending less attention on the defense and other areas of just coaching in general and being a head coach. So I know a lot of coaches around this league call plays, whether it's offense or defense, but, you know, Dan is like, he sees the full picture, and I don't know if he really wants his full attention to be on one thing when he can spread the wealth a little bit. Ideally. So maybe this is just the rest of the season and maybe you give it back to Morton, but even if not, and Campbell continues to call plays, I don't think that's the worst spot for Morton to be in. I reported earlier this year that, you know, Ben Johnson tried to hire John Morton to be his offensive coordinator. And obviously Ben Johnson's calling plays in Chicago. Yeah. But Morton's a guy there's a reason he's been hired by so many, like, offensive minds, because they trust his ability to get them into good situations and give them good advice in the right spots. Like, I think Morton was doing that a lot on Sunday, even when Dan was calling plays. So he's clearly trusted and respected. And so if that's where it's going to be from here on out, like, I still think he can be a valuable asset to Dan, to this coaching staff, because it is a collaborative effort here in Detroit. And as much as this is Dan's offense, you know, he's leaning on the other guys around him.
Yeah. What kind of beer is that, J-Raj? You just get a new one? You just get re-upped?
I did. Little bourbon stout. So this might go off the rails pretty quickly with this 12% action, but I do love that Colton brought up the resume. Harbaugh, Peyton, who's the third one I'm missing? There's another great coach in there that he's worked for multiple times.
Yeah.
Gruden?
I know.
Gruden, yeah.
If you count him. I mean,
I mean, still a good coach. I mean, despite, you know, some of the stuff that's we're talking on field. Unemployed. Yeah.
Like Sarkisian, I guess.
The fact that these great coaches have hired Morton multiple times, I think speaks volumes to what people feel about him.
Yeah, collaborative is definitely the key word around here. It's kind of amazing to hear Dan explain it and how many voices he has in his headset before he calls just a single play of 65 over the course of a game. You know, before each play, sounds like he's hearing now from John Morton. He's hearing from Hank Fraley, who operates the run game. He's hearing at times from Scotty Montgomery, the receivers coach and assistant head coach, and all of them are coming to him, as he explains it, with information that applies to that particular down and maybe what the defense has shown during this game in similar spots, or even what they've shown in similar down and distances over the course of the season. And then he is kind of compartmentalizing all of that and figuring out which play to call to best attack their tendencies. But I agree, Colton. I was going to bring up the same comment that Dan made in regard to Ben yesterday and how that helped him understand exactly how Dan wanted the game to be called. And it gave me a suspicion that, you know, maybe at this point next year, Morton is again calling plays and then Dan can spread more of himself around the team. But certainly this is his show from here on out this season, I think it's safe for all of us to say. And I agree, like, this role now that Morton finds himself in is maybe the best one to maximize his smarts, his sharpness. Like, I remember talking about this maybe when the season began, but when he was in his offensive assistant role here back in 2022, he would be in the booth even up to hours before the game, dissecting the opposing defense's tendencies and relaying those to Ben so that Ben could call plays that would be one step ahead of the defense, and going through all of their film from prior games and what defenses they deployed on 3rd and 7 against 12 personnel versus 3rd and 4 against pony personnel. And all of this information helped that offensive staff, you know, just operate as cleanly and smoothly as possible. And it sounds like he's kind of filling a similar role now. So I think maybe this is the setup of the staff that was best for them to end up in all along. And maybe it's not a bad thing that they find themselves here now in November.
Maybe fewer nights sleeping at the facility for Morton, too.
Yeah. Fair. Now, I do want to get your guys' thoughts. DJ Reed, Marcus Davenport both return to practice this week, and then we'll talk more about that Philly matchup later in the show. But first, we got to hear about our friends over at Sleeper.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
All right. There we go. We're all good. Let me tell you about our friends over at Sleeper, which you guys can use the code HMA. You get a $100 deposit matched up to $100. Sleeper, one of the fastest organically growing fantasy platforms in the entire world. It's got millions and millions of active users and only continuing to grow. They still earn some of the highest levels of engagement per user in the industry, because at Sleeper, it's not just about sports. It's about building personal connections and lasting memories. They have Sleeper Picks, which, if your state allows it, it's great. All right. It's a product that connects friends over picks. All you got to do is choose 2 to 8 of your favorite players from pregame, live, or even across different sports. I'm sure if you picked every Moore on the Lions offense, it probably would have smacked last week. So look to do it this week. Gamble responsibly. You pick more or less than the predicted stats, and on Sleeper, you get up to 1,000x payouts. Share with your friends and get rewarded together. Shout out to our friends over at Sleeper. All right. Let's get back to the show here. Let me change this overlay so we can. I think it's this.
Oh, we're getting phased out.
That. I mean, we are just, you know what? We're flowing right now. Fellas, let me get your thoughts on that. DJ Reed, Marcus Davenport return to practice. You have Malcolm Rodriguez in the process, Josh Pascal in the process. A lot of guys kind of expected it to come back and help this defense out. It is big news. These are players that guys were looking forward to coming back. Obviously, DJ Reed, to me, is the one that stands out. I'm excited for DJ Reed, Marcus Davenport as well. But what does this mean for this Lions defense? I know they've been playing pretty well overall. But just for the future here, as we get through a tough stretch of games, you got the Eagles, the Packers, the Rams in the next handful of weeks. What will these players kind of mean to this Lions defense going forward?
This is the Lions trade deadline additions, right? Like, they didn't make a trade because they're getting all these reinforcements back. And, you know, I look at what the Eagles got in Jalen Phillips and the impact that he had on Monday Night Football. It was tremendous. I 6 tackles, tackle for loss, fumble recovery, quarterback pressures, like everything that they hoped and dreamed to get at that deadline. Well, that's what Marcus Davenport should conceivably add to the Lions offense. Like, that's the type of player he's capable of being. Now, on top of that, you're going to get one of the best man cover corners in the league. You're going to get a really great depth linebacker that's starting caliber. He's the Coyote Iwasika of the defense, if you will. Josh Pascal, who's another rotational edge that gives them some more depth at a position where they maybe don't have a ton of it. So these are all really helpful additions to a defense that's been playing pretty well without them, but can take it to another level with them.
Yeah, it was funny. Right before we went out to practice today, I asked some of the guys in the room, it's like, you know, what are the chances we see a guy that we're not expecting to see? Because knowing Dan, the last few weeks, he's forgotten to tell us about some guys that returned to practice or had their clock started. And I was just like, what are the odds we see like Davenport or Reed? Like probably non-zero chance, right? And we go out there. I'm like, there's number four. All right, there's one. And I look in the back and I see a large man in sweatpants. And Davenport always wears these gray sweats when he's out there. And I was like, all right, that's Davenport. There we go. So you're welcome for speaking that into existence, Lions. But yeah, I mean, those are huge reinforcements. And they add to a growing list with, as Justin mentioned, you know, Josh Pascal, Malcolm Rodriguez, both should be back soon in the near future. Those are reinforcements for sure. And getting a guy back like DJ Reed is going to be huge. And, you know, I talked to him a couple weeks ago. He told me he was targeting later in November. I wasn't sure exactly what that meant. Like, he told me that, you know, late October, early November. So that could have been mid-November is maybe where I was thinking, or late November. Campbell said early December. So maybe they're thinking kind of a few more weeks out, maybe not this game. But he did say today, hey, I feel like I'm ready to go. But, you know, obviously it's not my decision. So something to monitor there. I don't imagine he's going to play this week. But if he does, for some reason, you're looking pretty good there. Terrion still in concussion protocol. You know, we'll see if he clears that by the end of the week. But if he does, you know, obviously he's playing really well right now. And then to get a Marcus Davenport back. And, you know, if you kind of haven't noticed him sometimes that being out because Alquini Muhammad's filled in pretty well. But just having the bigger body type, the guy that can set an edge and win a rush with power, you know, that's a good weapon to have in your arsenal for sure. So as these guys get back and Malcolm adding depth to that linebacker room, and I'm sure Kelvin Shepherd is, you know, excited to see how he can deploy him. This defense is going to get even stronger when some of these guys are back and at full strength. So it's a good time. It feels like the inverse of last year where you're losing guys at this time of year. Now they're getting them back, and that defense that's already playing at a high level can really send from here when they return.
Yeah, I mean, if Dan said DJ is expected late November, early December, he'll play on Sunday night.
How this is going, yeah, right?
Yeah, it's a guarantee now.
He typically loses those battles with the players, is what it seems.
Yeah, a little more forthcoming than Aaron Glenn, huh, over in New York.
Oh, my God, yeah. How about that?
Fights, making enemies, first season in. I you know, what a sigh of relief this has been for DJ Reed. I mean, you know, he was the first to say when he first went down and he gets carted off the field, he really thought that his season was over, that was it, that just a few games into his three-year deal here, he was going to have to watch the rest of his first year from the sidelines. And then, you know, gets some more positive reports over the next few days. And now here he is about a month and a half later, closing in on a return. And it's huge. I don't know if, you know, among all of the players we've listed, I think getting DJ Reed back makes the biggest difference. He really was, when he went down, playing like the number one cover corner, man corner they thought they signed. He was traveling with the opposing team's best receivers. He entirely took Zay Flowers out of the game against the Ravens back in week three. I know it was an easier matchup the next week against Jerry Jeudy, I think, with the Browns, but he was doing it again that week. And you were just seeing the vision come to life of what the Lions signed him for. And in addition to all the good plays, strong plays he was making against the run, that one's huge. And I know, I agree. I think by the end of this year, it's not crazy to think that the Lions could enter the playoffs and we could be sitting here talking about their defense as the strength of this team. And I understand that we just saw the offense put up 44 points and look more like itself last Sunday against the Commanders. But with the reinforcements coming to this defense and the way that it's played through the first 2 months of the season, this feels, first of all, more like a complete team, more complete than it's been maybe ever under Dan Campbell, at least before all of the injuries last year or after all of the injuries last year. And, you know, you look up on November 12th, and I know this team tries to keep a narrow view, but the wide view now is really encouraging for the ceiling of this team with this defense only getting better as it gets healthier.
Let me frame it a little bit differently too. Marcus Davenport is going to be an upgrade from Tyler Lacy, who has filled in very well, but Davenport offers more of an impact, right? Josh Pascal is going to be an upgrade from Tyrus Wheat and actually find his way onto the field. I think the really interesting discussion is how does this affect Amik Robertson, who you say, you know, all this great things about DJ Reed that are accurate, but Amik has stepped in and been that guy. He has played man coverage. He has traveled. He has done a stellar job doing it. And right now the nickel is having a really hard time seeing the field in Detroit. Maybe that's just because it's Arthur Millette versus Amik Robertson, but they're playing their linebackers 100% of snaps right now, all three of them. And I know we talked to linebacker coach David Correo today, and he said, you don't want that. You don't want your guys playing 100% of snaps. You want to find them breathers. And so maybe they find a way to incorporate more nickel once DJ Reed's back. But I mean, you've got to get Amik Robertson on the field. He is playing at such a high level right now, and they've got three cornerbacks that are. It's just going to be really interesting because they're a team that likes to play base defense, but they have three really good cornerbacks as well. It's going to be a good problem, I think, for Kelvin Shepherd to try to solve.
Yeah, when you look at the nickel rate of the Lions, they're playing about 35.9% of the time, which is the second lowest in the NFL. So that's a good point to bring up because Amik has been balling out, man. And he's a guy that is not going to go down quietly. He's going to make his presence felt, as he should. He's a good player, and he belongs on the field. So, you know, even when they had all their healthy DBs, you know, they were talking about getting him more snaps, and maybe that came at the expense of Terrion a little bit, but they wanted to get him on the field a little bit more. So I'm curious how that dynamic is going to work when DJ's back on a full-time basis. But Amik is playing well. Look, and all these guys have stepped in, and that's sort of what they expect from this group. The standard is the standard. They don't want to see a drop-off. And Amik's here for a reason. He's going to be counted on for sure.
Yeah.
Amik doesn't do anything quietly.
No. No,
anything.
It's a Louisiana.
He doesn't know how, even if you told him to be. What? What is that? Couple of things. First of all, I love that DJ Reed, who has three under the age of three at home, has to be thrilled about having something to do again on Sundays. Like, I know, just having 1 2-year-old sometimes, how challenging it could be to try and watch something, much less a game of a team that you belong to on a Sunday afternoon. So he's got to be pretty pumped to get back out there whenever that is. I was asking him today, like, which of, you know, if any of his kids without dad out there have chosen a different favorite player. And he was like, well, they're all under three, so they all think I'm still out there, even though I'm sitting right next to them on the couch. They're like, dad, there's number four. He's like, I'm right here. I am me right here. No, but I think maybe one of the best ways to kind of take stock of this growing depth on the defense is the fact that Tyleek Williams, who I think we all agree has played pretty darn well for a rookie who's been thrust into a big role, you know, enters that game against the Commanders and leaves it having only played, I think, 10 snaps, maybe even fewer, because Aleem McNeil is obviously back, and he has consumed a lot of those pass rushing snaps. And Roy Lopez is playing better than ever and emerging more and more as, you know, a stout player against the run. And now you've got a first round pick who kind of has to earn his way back into the mix. And I know some of the, you know, advanced metrics don't paint a great picture of the way that Tyleek has played, especially and kind of curiously against the run, but you go back and watch his contributions. I think he has been close to as good as they could have hoped, you know, putting him in that role as a rookie. And I know he's had some discipline issues with jumping out of gaps at times as he adjusts to a different scheme here in Detroit than the one he played at Ohio State. But that's just another example of all the different talent they have now. And it's as Colton said, a good problem for Shep to have. He's got to be kind of, you know, rubbing his hands together and licking his chops as he kind of figures out what the next 2 months is going to look like for this defense.
No, I think it's a perfect transition here to kind of talk about this game on Sunday night. Lions-Eagles, we'll get our thoughts on that, just the matchup, NFC Championship potentially preview. I think the Lions are going to have a lot of answers because for the rest of the year, they play, in my opinion, two of the top three teams besides the Lions in the NFC right now. Not record-wise only, but I think just talent-wise. I mean, you have the Rams and Eagles on the schedule. They don't play the Seahawks. Respect to the Bucs, but they're just dealing with a ton of injuries right now. So you're going to have a good feel for this team come Sunday night, and you're going to have a good feel for this team when they go to LA to play the Rams. But what can the Lions take away from this game? I know it's a, you know, see how you measure against a team that won the Super Bowl last year, although we can agree it's not the same exact team as they won the Super Bowl with, but it's still a very good team. But what are some things you guys are kind of looking to see in this game on Sunday night to kind of get maybe answers or maybe a better feel for where this team is when it comes to being legitimate Super Bowl contenders?
For me, it's 100% the offensive line. You know, where does it lie between what we saw with the Vikings, where there was some breakdowns, plenty of schematic issues, versus how dominant it was against Washington? I mean, they were bullies in that game. And Philadelphia's defensive line is awesome. I mean, it really is, and particularly in the interior with the Georgia boys, with Jordan Davis and Jalen Carter. I think Morrow, Jomo, yeah. I believe is pronounced. I mean,
yeah.
it reminds me kind of Jalen Redmond with Minnesota, where it's a guy that had a smaller role, got a bigger role because a guy left and has absolutely thrived. I mean, he is generating a ton of pressure. He's taking advantage of the one-on-ones that the other guys are creating for him. And we talked about already, Jalen Phillips has added a dynamic to their pass rush. And that is how that team won the Super Bowl. I mean, they flustered and hit and disrupted Mahomes all game. How does this offensive line, which is coming off a really wonderful performance, how does it step up and respond to this pretty dominant defensive front from the Eagles? I guess Nolan Smith, I probably should include him in that as well.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
How do you respond to that? If you can hold up in the same, not even the same way, like 80% of the same way, create some holes for Gibbs and Demo, give Jared some time, get the play action game going because you've established second and third and manageable. Like, that's going to be really encouraging, win or loss, if the offensive line holds up well in this game and gives the offense some opportunities to move the ball and score some points.
Go ahead, Bridgie.
Yeah, we talked to Ahmed Hassanin today for the first time since, you know, they waived him way back at the end of training camp. And that's always a fun, colorful, sincere interview. And he hit on a bunch of different topics, but at one point he was just kind of asked, I think maybe about the prospects for this team and where they are and rejoining them at a point in the season where they seem to maybe be hitting their stride. And he referenced a meeting that the team had with Dan Campbell today. And one of the things Dan said was like, we've wanted this team for so long. Like, we are fired up to finally get him. And Ahmed was like, I wanted to play right then and there. But that's real. You know, the Lions have played a lot of the big dogs in the regular season over the course of the past couple of years, where they've established themselves as big dogs. And the one they haven't run into yet since 2022 before their rise is Philly. And no doubt Dan, when the schedule came out, saw this one, eyes lit up, may have literally circled that. I could see Dan being an old school printed out hard copy schedule guy, literally circling the games, highlighting the games that he's most eager for
with his reading glasses on.
Yeah. He was all over this one. And yeah, you know, we definitely saw the interior of the offensive line step up last week. That's why the offense functioned as smoothly as it did. It's going to have to do the same against a much stiffer challenge on Sunday night. And, you know, this Eagles defense, a little bit like the Lions defense, is adding some of its missing pieces at the right time. Nolan Smith comes back this past week and makes a pretty clear impact. When you look at some of the pieces they lost and or were missing in Milton Williams, Josh Sweat, and Nolan Smith, those were their three best pass rushers by sacks last season. And so obviously, you know, they're still trying to plug that production in Williams, and they've gotten some on the interior and in Sweat, and that's been a little bit harder, but maybe Nolan Smith plugs that hole. But this defense, as Scotty Montgomery said today, is the most talented the Lions have faced this season from top to bottom. And the numbers maybe don't bear that out yet. 18th, I think, overall in total defense. And it's about where they rank in scoring defense as well. But at home on a Sunday night in what Dan Campbell called heavyweight match, those guys are going to be raring to go. And it's going to be on the Lions, and in particular, Graham Glasgow, Tate Ratledge, and Coyote Awosika to answer.
Yeah, I'm Dan is going to be fired up for this one. He's already made tons of comments about playing in Philly when he was a player, and, you know, someone was it dip spit getting poured on him.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Batteries getting thrown at him. Like, he's setting the tone for, and I know it's a different time, different era, but he is setting the tone for, you know, going into a hostile environment and giving it your all. And look, man, I'm sure Dan, at various points last year, even though he didn't play the Eagles, he's pointing to other teams in the NFC saying, you might see these guys in January. You might see these guys at some point later in the season, even though they're not directly on our schedule now. So we got to be prepared. Like, he even talking about the tush push, he said,
yeah,
we prepared for that a little bit. Just you never know who you're going to see. I guarantee you, like if this team were healthy going into the playoffs, and you know, even if you have like Hutch, Aleem, and maybe Carlton Davis as guys that were available in January, you win that game versus the Commanders, man, that would have been a heavyweight showdown against the Eagles in that NFC Championship game. Like, that would have been something special to watch. And, you know, we were kind of robbed of that with some of the injuries, but I'm sure there's an emphasis placed on this one from Dan and everyone in that room, all the guys on the coaching staff. But for a game like this, like, just coming off the Commanders game, I want to see how much of what we saw is sustainable. And I'm not talking about the crazy numbers, which I do want to read some of them just to highlight what a mismatch that game was. Bert, you talked about the play action rate. It was 26.5% from what I saw. That was the second highest in week 10 among teams. The Lions are 3-0, averaging 44.3 points per game when their play action rate is above 20% this season. Their explosive play rate was 16.2%. That was their second highest of the season. 32.4% of their plays went for 10 or more yards. That was their highest rate of the season. They recorded a season best offensive success rate of 56.6%. Their EPA per play of 0.46 versus the Commanders was the highest mark in a single game by any team this season. Their pressure rate of 25.7% was the second lowest allowed in week 10. Goff wasn't sacked. Only 9.1% of Detroit's rushing attempts went for 0 negative yards. That was the second lowest of the season. Their EPA per rush of 0.27 was their second highest of the season. They converted 50% of their third down attempts, their highest mark of the season, tied with Baltimore. Their 12 personnel rate was 18.5%. That was their second lowest of the season. So fewer of those two tight end sets. They did go jumbo a few times.
Yeah.
35.3% of their plays were at shotgun, second lowest of the season. And last one, Detroit's offense finished with 0 penalties for the 6th time in the Dan Campbell era. So
you're saying they played pretty well?
Not bad. Not bad.
Yeah, we'll take it.
So I don't know if you're going to see all that against the Eagles. They play some good defense over there. But I am curious, like, it's the elements of the offense that we saw. Getting the ball to JMO, getting Montgomery on the field earlier in those games and making sure that he's not phased out with anything. You know, just there's so many elements that we saw that made it look like a Dan Campbell offense. And so I'm curious how much of that they can replicate versus Eagles defense, which is going to be tough. They're playing some really good football back right now. They're getting some guys back from injury. So I'm curious how much of that is sustainable versus how much of that was just the Commanders.
Yeah, one of the most important elements, and I don't think we've touched on it yet, is that that's the Jameson Williams that I think a lot of us have been waiting to see and that a lot of us saw with our own eyes during training camp. And I know that a lot of the fan base has been clamoring for. He doesn't have to be solely a deep threat. And that's kind of what he had become or was starting to become with John Morton calling plays. And I know J-Raj was one of the first to kind of note the average depth of target spiking this season in kind of an unhealthy way. And that really was true. And then it settled back down to closer to where it was last season in that game against the Commanders. And voila, there's the guy who's catching six-pack passes for 119 yards and a touchdown. And I don't think it really shocked anyone that his longest gain of the day came on his shallowest target of the day. He caught that pass 5 yards beyond the line of scrimmage. And yes, he benefited from two Commanders doing Commanders-like things and colliding at the top of his route, and that afforded him some more space. But all he needs is a sliver, and then he turns on the Jets, and he's up the sideline for 41 yards. And I think he only caught one pass that was beyond 13 yards past the line of scrimmage. And that's J-Mo being used in more creative ways and in more progressive, threatening ways. And I don't care where he gets the ball on the field. If he gets it in stride, as Jared said, he is a cheat code. And so I think it was really encouraging to see that version of him deployed and come to life. And that's the version that reached 1,000 yards last season for the first time in his career in Ben Johnson and Dan Campbell's offense. And ideally, that's the one we see again on Sunday night and for most of the rest of this season.
I think you're underselling it, Will. That's the version that can be a 1,500-yard receiver in this league in the right circumstance. I'm not saying that's here with all the weapons, but the thing we've been talking about so much is the precision of the route running, in particular the comeback route. That is the one I've been kind of hammering home that we were seeing all camp that just wasn't being shown. But I think his ability to slam on the brakes is almost as impressive as his ability to accelerate. And when you have to play on your heels to defend that deep ball, and you can have a receiver that could slam on the brakes like that, and a quarterback that is really good with the timing concepts. This was the first time we saw it, I guess, in the Tampa game, although it got erased by the penalty. But to see that twice in this game, you saw it on the third down on the opening drive to extend that drive. You saw it early in the third quarter on what I believe was that deep target that you were talking about. And then the thing I really love about those comeback routes that is entirely underrated, how quickly he spins out of it and uses his speed. Like, usually a comeback route's kind of DOA. Like, once you catch that ball, you're done. Like, that's the route. And he's somehow able to turn those into yak plays, which I think is such a rare ability. Also, let's go back to that route where the defenders collided. Why did they collide? Well, the play action was working. Mm-hmm. They were so threatened by the run that they came forward creating the artificial rub, right? And that's when the offense is just clicking in such a complimentary way. And yeah, this is the Jameson Williams we were telling you existed. And it was really nice to see it come to fruition finally, because this guy is or has become such a much more complete receiver. And it was nice to see that finally on display, even though it took 9 games into the season.
And those comeback routes open up all kinds of possibilities for deep shots on double moves going forward. Like, every good rep that J-Mo puts on tape is something else for defensive backs who are covering him to worry about in the future. And they really hadn't shown that side of his game yet this year. Now, when you go back and watch that tape, if you're the DB who is tasked with defending him Sunday night, you're going to have that rooted in your brain. On third down, he might be coming back, and then J-Mo puts on the brakes and then cooks downfield. You might be looking at a 60, 70 yard gain. Like, the Lions hadn't shown enough of him this season to the rest of the NFL, to D coordinators, to defensive backs. And it felt like they really did for the first time Sunday. And that will allow J-Mo to make more explosive plays over the course of the rest of this season.
Yeah, you want to sit on those deep routes? Fine. Let me hit those hitch routes at 15-yard depth and eat all day long.
And you want to jump the comeback? See ya. I'm going.
No, I'll ask you guys before we get out of here. It seemed like I called a 30-point game and been calling it every single week, and was hoping I could speak it into existence, pull a Colton, and I ended up speaking it into existence. So I think we're at a hot streak right now when it comes to – I'm just going to say it. I think Lions Collective is on a hot streak now.
Yes.
Pick them. So what do you guys make of it? How do you think this game plays out? I think the Eagles, I just checked today, they're 2.5-point favorites at home. So it's about a pick 'em, to be honest. But how do you see this game playing out score-wise?
It's a great line. I mean, it feels right, and I guess that's what Vegas does, right? They hit you with those lines that just get you thinking. I really think that this is a 3-point game either way. I think it's going to be tight. I think the Eagles have allowed opposing teams to gain 310 yards or less in 6 of their 9 games. Like, when that defense is on, it's on, and it's really tough. Lions offense obviously is cooking from that game, but I think it's going to be a little bit lower scoring. I think we're going to see something in the 24-27 ballpark. Hate to do it, but I'm going to give the Eagles this one. I think there's still some kinks to work out for this Lions team, and I think you still would be encouraged with that result.
Go ahead, Colton.
Well, I was thinking 27-24 Eagles. So
let's do it.
You know what? I'll ride you for that one. We'll go. Sorry, I got it. You know what? Tail that one.
Yeah. Mustafa. Edit.
Hutch is laughing somewhere. Hutch, and he has no idea why.
Yeah, I knew it immediately. I was like, all right, here we go. If this might be the first time that we've had the same score prediction, but I will also go 27-24 Eagles, just because I think, look, man, going to Philly's, it's a hard place to play. They're playing at a high level right now. They're 7-2. And as much as I trust Dan Campbell leading this offense, I think this is a game they probably drop. And hey, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. We can come back and look at it next week, and I'll say you're welcome for picking at some, because that's usually what happens on the show.
Hey, Will, get on the train. Everybody
Dave,
ride.
Dave Phipps' antenna just went up too. He had a moment of his own last week talking about low balls, where he didn't exactly say pause, but you could put it in the brackets. It was implied. He was like, man, that That sounds like kind of weird. I wanted to tell him, like, Dave, the phrase is pause. That's all you got to say. I will also go with 27-24, but I'll say 27-24 Lions. I think the Lions go to Philly in what's sure to be a hostile, raucous, uninviting environment and find a way to make a couple explosive plays and get out of town with, you know, a signature win of the season. This would be a win that I think right now is fair to say their resume lacks. And I'm not big into dissecting teams' resumes 9 games, 10 games into the year. If you win games in the NFL, you win games. But this would be one that sends a message loud and clear across the NFC and the league that the Lions are a force to be reckoned with Campbell calling plays. And, you know, maybe it's a trick play touchdown late in the fourth quarter that swings this game in their favor. As much as Ben Johnson's well was deep, Dan Campbell knows that well too. He can dip into that himself. And, you know, this might be a game where he feels like I got to do something special. I got to do something creative to help my team across the finish line. And I don't know, maybe Dan Skipper ends up catching a touchdown to propel the Lions to a victory Sunday night. But I think more likely is that we see some more of the explosives that we saw last week, either from Gibbs and or from J-Mo. And I think that will be enough to beat an Eagles team that is every bit the contender the Lions are. And this is going to be a great game, boys. Like, I really cannot wait for Sunday night. This is why you play the game, as Campbell likes to say. No one reveres, enjoys, embraces going on the road in the NFL like Dan Campbell. I think a lot of coaches say they like it. Dan Campbell craves this stuff, dude. He loves going behind enemy lines and feeling the hate and the heat from the opposing fans and finding a way to get it done. He was talking about this last year before they went to Lambeau in that October game. And he was like, man, there's nothing better than getting in the huddle and you're on the road and it's the whole world against you. And you just look your teammates in the eye and you're like, let's go. I think his energy is going to infect his team, his players, in a good way Sunday night, and they'll get this one done.
And then that Lambeau crowd was 30% Lions fans.
Yeah.
70 by game's end.
Yeah, I'll go. You know what? I'm going to go a little different here. I'm going to go Lions win. I'll go 25-24. Dan Campbell goes for two to win the game. And they get it. So I'm going,
hey, now.
Dan Campbell balls in a wheelbarrow. I'm going full Dan Campbell here. All right. And then people are going to go, oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, yeah. All right. They're going to get the 2-point conversion. It's going to be that type of game. We'll get out of here. We'll be back next Wednesday, 6 p.m. These fellows will be covering the game, so you can follow them on X or whatever platform else they're on. We'll see you guys next week. Until then, go Lions.
Peace.